Our study in the book of Genesis. We'll be in chapter 48 tonight. So turn in your Bibles to that. If you're at home joining us for the Bible study and you got the word nearby, flip over to Genesis 48. I got to do that myself here. Right near the end. There's only a few more weeks left. Like I said, I've been in the cafe with the students on Wednesday night, so I haven't got to join y'all for the whole study of the book of Genesis. I'm sure y'all have been in it for a while, but to catch you guys up to speed, a quick recap of the book of Genesis. I know it's been several weeks. We've been going through the book for a long time, and it's surprisingly cool how, I guess, linear the book of Genesis is. Everything kind of leads to the next thing in a very kind of like congruent way, and it's really good here. So, you know, we started with creation, you know, the Genesis 1, God created the heavens and the earth, and then Adam and Eve, and then when you get to chapter 3, there's the fall of Adam and Eve. They've sinned before God. God kicks them out of the garden. After that is the flood with Noah's ark. There's the Tower of Babel, you know, humanity trying to make a name for themselves and build this great tower to outmaneuver God in their own way. God, of course, confuses their languages and scatters them among the earth. And we get the promise of Abraham, which will be an important thing we'll talk about tonight. But God picking Abraham to carry this promise that he gave them, you know, giving him the promise to be the father of this great nation of Israel. We have God rescuing Lot from Sodom and Gomorrah. There's, of course, the test of Abraham with his son Isaac when God called Abraham to sacrifice his son Isaac, the vehicle of that promise that he gave them. He goes to sacrifice him, but the Lord spares him at the final moments to test Abraham and make sure he was holy for him and not just for the gifts that he gave him. We have Esau and Jacob that we'll cover quite a bit tonight about how Jacob, in a way, kind of swindled Esau from his birthright, and he now becomes kind of the vehicle of this promise that we're talking tonight. We've got Joseph and the robe of many colors. That was a more recent one in the last few weeks. Y'all know Joseph, the man who was the favorite son of Jacob, which made his brothers bitter and angry. So they staged his death. They threw him in a pit and then told, you know, Jacob that he was killed. Joseph gets picked up by slave traders. He's sold as a slave to Egypt. So Joseph gets to Egypt. And God, having favor on Joseph's life, he winds up in prison, the way that God does things. And Joseph becomes an interpreter of dreams for Pharaoh, which puts him in a very high status in Egyptian society. And he essentially becomes kind of the right-hand man to Pharaoh and the whole nation of Egypt, which was essentially the world's superpower at this time. The world is going in great famine. Joseph has the foresight from the Lord to stock up food for everyone. So the nations come to Egypt for help and aid, and Egypt becomes this amazing, great, huge superpower of a country because of it, because of the Lord using Joseph. Egypt got the residual blessing kind of from God's favor on Joseph. Joseph being God's man there, Egypt got to kind of reap the reward of it. So Joseph's brothers, the ones who tried to have him killed and staged his death and threw him in a pit, they end up going to Egypt, and Joseph reconciles with his brothers, and his old family comes to town, comes to Egypt. And that's essentially most of Genesis in a nutshell, of God carrying his people through these times and landing them in Egypt. And that's where it puts us right here. It's all about this promise. All of these things in the book of Genesis kind of circles back to this promise that God gave Abraham here in Genesis 17, verses 6 and 8. God is telling Abraham, I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make you into nations, and kings shall come from you, and I will establish my covenant between me and you and your offspring after you throughout their generations, for an everlasting covenant to be God to you, everlasting covenant to be God to you and to your offspring after you. And I will give to you and to your offspring after you the land of your sojournings, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. So God promised the Israelites, first of all, a place to go to, and then also a relationship. God told them the place that they will occupy as a nation, but he also ends that promise with, I will be their God. The Lord of the universe has chosen to be the God of the people of Israel and to be this vehicle of the promise that God has given them here, to carry it throughout history up until this day. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. We're in verse 1 of chapter 48 now, so I'm going to jump in right here in verse 1. After this, Joseph was told, "Behold, your father is ill." So he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, and it was told to Jacob, "Your son Joseph has come to you." Then Israel summoned his strength and sat up in bed, Israel also known as Jacob. So these few verses do a pretty good job of painting exactly what's going on here. It kind of speaks for itself, but to give a little bit of context to the situation, Jacob is very old at this point. He can be pegged as about 130 years old by this time, given some things that he says in a previous chapter and his age at his death in some later chapters. So it's safe to assume that when Joseph heard that his father, Jacob, also known as Israel, was ill, he understood that he was dying. So Joseph, being the good dad, he took his two Egyptian boys that he had in his time in Egypt to see their grandpa for the last time. This is a serious meeting that one does not forget, right? Surely there's some of y'all listening here tonight who've experienced the death of someone in their family, being present with them, knowing that the time is coming. It's a very serious meeting, right? I know I was in the hospital room with my wife's grandfather when he passed away, and the family was everywhere, and it was just a very sobering and serious time in your life. And man, that's just stamped forever in my brain. You know, it's just a very important moment in my life, seeing someone pass on into eternity. So that's kind of the context of what's happening right here. Joseph is taking his boys to see Jacob, who is passing away from some illness. Verse 3. And Jacob said to Joseph, "God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said to me, 'Behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make of you a company of peoples and will give this land to your offspring after you for an everlasting possession. And now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine. Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine, as Reuben and Simeon are. And the children that you fathered after them shall be yours. They shall be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance.'" So what old dying Jacob essentially does here is that he actually adopts Joseph's Egyptian children. Mind you, Joseph has an Egyptian wife here, so these are half Egyptian by blood, and then half Israelite under Joseph. So Ephraim and Manasseh are now receiving the same family status that Joseph and his brothers have received, as far as kind of inheriting that promise from God of being the nation of Israel, to go forth and have all this offspring that's just going to go forth among the world. And man, can we take a moment to appreciate the Old Testament's kind of picture of Jesus, of the gospel right here at this point, of God's favor on us, right? It's just so cool. We have Jacob here, who's essentially he's the current embodiment of God's promise to the world, right? It's kind of living in this old dying man, Jacob. He's holding God's promise, like he's the proof of it. And he brings Joseph in with his two Egyptian boys, and he just hands that promise over to these two children who are very small. You know, like given the passage here, you can deduce that they're very small children. They're half Egyptian. They're, he's his long-lost son, Joseph, has been spending all his time in a foreign land here. And so they're among Jacob here, and he's handing this promise over to Ephraim and Manasseh. And they really don't have to do very much on their part, right? As children, you know, they just kind of had to be there and receive the gift that Jacob was giving them, right? That's so much of just a picture of the gospel today. Don't you see that parallel in our lives with Jesus Christ and in our life? There's really not much that, you know, those two young boys had no business being there, essentially. They grew up in a foreign land. Like I said, they're half Egyptian. They don't look like the rest of the family. You know, like the rest of the, you know, bloodline of Joseph, you know, fully Israelite. They didn't spend their life sojourning, you know, in the wilderness, waiting for God's promise to come out, doing the hard, gritty work of being shepherds. You know, all they had to do was receive the position that was offered to them. And that's just a beautiful picture of God's grace and work in our own lives. There's very little that we have to do in our lives to be a recipient of God's favor, just like how these children were recipients of the promises of God through Jacob. Man, one of my favorite passages in Acts chapter 16, I love to share this passage whenever I'm sharing the gospel to students or to people I meet, and that's when Paul and Silas are arrested for sharing the gospel in the New Testament church days. They're in prison, and they're singing hymns to God while just suffering in jail, you know, waiting for their punishment. The Holy Spirit shakes the prison. The prison bars, you know, open up. All of the cells open up. The jailer in charge there is ready to kill himself because he knows that he blew it as a jailer. All of his, you know, prisoners are going to escape. So he's just going to kill himself and just pass by the punishment that he was going to receive from his officials. But Paul and Silas shout out from the jail cell, hold up, we're all here. And the jailer is so amazed at it, he asks them, sirs, what must I do to be saved? And Paul's amazing, simple reply is, believe in the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved. All we have to do is just receive that promise, receive that gift that is given to us from the Lord. And, you know, admit that kind of we've blown it as far as trying to attain that by our own power. We can't do that. We get that from the grace and mercy received from Jesus Christ. Jonathan Edwards said it really well here. He says, you contribute nothing to your salvation except the sin that made it necessary. We're recipients of God's grace because he's the kind of God that does that. And that is an incredible thing, and we can't forget that in light of this passage right here and then in light of today where we're living today as the church. At the end of the day, we're a bunch of kids in a foreign land, far from God, right? And we've received a great inheritance, just like these kids here. We've received the gospel. We have somewhere to go after this. We'll touch on that a little more later. Verse 7. As for me, Jacob talking here, as for me, when I came from Paddan, to my sorrow, Rachel died in the land of Canaan on the way, when there is still some distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. When Israel saw Joseph's sons, he said, who are these? Joseph said to his father, there are my sons, from whom God has given me here. And he said, bring them to me, please, that I may bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. So Joseph brought them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, I never expected to see your face, and behold, God has let me see your offspring also. Man, the situation is almost poetic if you just get the whole context of what happened here in Genesis. You know, the lifetime of Jacob's deeds of swindling and running and suffering and wrestled with God has circled back to this moment of blessing in his life. He's here with his children, and he's passing on the blessing of the Lord to them. If you remember, Jacob, back in the day, he cheated his brother Esau for the birthright, right? For the blessing from Isaac. A lot of us know the story, but, I mean, if you don't, Jacob was a little bit of a mama's boy. He liked cooking in the kitchen. Esau was the bow hunter. He was hairy, man's man, whatever. Esau despised his birthright. He did not accept what God was calling him to be. So he sold it to Jacob. And then Jacob was very sneaky. And his father Isaac, he was going blind and old at age. So Jacob pretended to be Esau and to go in to Isaac's place where he was at and receive Esau's blessing. He was a swindler. Jacob was a swindler. He kind of just conned his way into his birthright and into this blessing. And from then on, you know, like he's out in this land carrying the blessing, and he has to deal with Laban and gets into this kind of crooked deal and working for these wives. And Laban swindles him, and then Jacob kind of swindles him back by rounding up, you know, certain goats and kind of manipulating the herd so he gets more and all that. And then he spends all this time of his life running from Esau, knowing that Esau is kind of on his tail out there in the wilderness. Jacob becomes this wrestler of God, that amazing passage further back in Genesis of him being then named Israel. Just all of this stuff that happened in Jacob's life, him losing his son Joseph, him thinking that he was dead for years and years, Joseph being missing in Egypt, and then getting to see him face to face, now seeing Joseph's children and Jacob being able to give that blessing to his children, all of this has circled back to that promise back in Genesis 17 of God being faithful in fulfilling his promises that he gives to his children. And it's just an amazing picture we see here, right? And what's really cool here, guys, is that Jacob's a changed man now. He's very different from the previous chapters as an old man here. He says, you know, there's no more lying. He's not running anymore. There's no more wrestling with God. He is a dying old man that is now at peace, seeing his son and his grandkids alive. And he's going to hand that promise of God, that blessing, on to the next generation. And guys, just what a cool picture of God being a redeemer in Jacob's life, in Joseph's life, and in our lives as well. He can take all of the bad and just make it work out for our good, right? People get so hung up with that question of why does God allow bad things to happen in this world, right? That's like the big question that skeptics, atheists, everyone likes to kind of present before Christians. But they forget about the fact that we're often the ones that cause the bad things in the world to happen. Us sinful people, we're responsible for the wickedness in the world. And also God has this way of taking just terrible things that happen and redeeming it and flipping it around and working it out for his glory. And that's the kind of God that is the God over us. He's still working today as he did in Genesis. What an amazing truth to hold on to. Verse 12. Then Joseph removed them, the boys, from his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand towards Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand towards Israel's right hand. So he's bringing his boys up to Jacob, to Israel, for Israel to bless them. And he brought them near him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the head of Ephraim, like that, who was the younger, and his left hand on the head of Manasseh, crossing his hands, like that. Okay, you got it? For Manasseh was the firstborn. It's kind of weird, but it makes sense here in a minute. And he blessed Joseph and said, the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys, and in them let my name be carried on, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. So Jacob, we talked about this just a few minutes ago. He's a pretty sneaky dude, right? You know, back in his younger days, like I said, he swindled Esau like out of the birthright. He got a little tricky with Laban. He wrestled with God, all of these things. He's a sneaky dude. And so he's got one more sneaky one left in him, all right? As he's dying here, you know, he's gonna bless these children. But Joseph, the father of these kids, you know, he's arranging it so that his older boy, Manasseh, will receive kind of the right-handed blessing. And culturally, in this time, that's very important. It still kind of carries over somewhat to this day, that the right hand, being mostly the dominant hand that everyone knows as, is that is like symbolic of like the first and the best. So if someone laid their hand on someone to bless them, they would normally do it with their right hand to receive kind of the best blessing. And if there was a younger sibling, the second born, they would get the left hand of the blessing, right? But the right hand was the special one. That was the special blessing. What Jacob does, so Joseph arranges for that to happen, right? He wants Manasseh to receive the greater blessing and Ephraim to get the lesser one. Jacob, being a sneaky boy, crisscrosses them arms. He pulls a fast one on Joseph here. So Joseph arranges his boys to be blessed in order of birthright, one being blessed with the right hand and one with the left. And Jacob works his old tried and true switcheroo by switching hands on the boys. The younger son, Ephraim, receives the greater blessing with the right hand, while Manasseh receives the lesser blessing with the left. Oddly, this is a funny thing, guys, is that God himself seems to have a pattern of allowing that to happen, and even in some cases approves that. As you read in the Gospels, Jesus telling his disciples, teaching them about the kingdom of heaven, he tells them, so the last will be first and the first last. And you even see this pattern throughout Genesis that we've gone through these past few weeks. We see that with Cain and Abel. Back in the beginning, God received Abel's sacrifice. There we go, sorry, it's been a long day. God received Abel's sacrifice before Cain's. Ishmael, being the firstborn of Abraham, did not receive the same blessing that Isaac did. And we just talked about Esau and Jacob, how that switcheroo happened. And even Joseph with Reuben. Joseph seemed to receive a greater blessing than Reuben did. Kind of that switcheroo there. And this guy should remind us, you know, I don't know why exactly the Lord does that, but I know that it should remind us that it is God who makes the plans, not us. All right? We go through life so much making all these plans, saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to accomplish that, I'm going to do this and that, without seeking the will of God first. And in faith, accepting the fact that it is He who directs our paths, and we need to be open and receptive in faith to those plans that God has in our life, even when He pulls a switcheroo on us sometimes, right? So moving on to verse 17. When Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. And he took his father's hand to move it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. So Joseph's there trying to fix it. And Joseph said to his father, not this way, my father, since this one is the firstborn, put your right hand on his head. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. Nevertheless, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his offspring shall become a multitude of nations. And we find this to be true also. Ephraim becomes the dominant tribe in northern Israel throughout the rest of the Old Testament history. So verse 20 right here. So he blessed them that day, saying, by you, Israel will pronounce blessings, saying, God made you as Ephraim and as Manasseh. Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. Man, I can't help but think of the times in my life where I was like Joseph in this situation. I asked God for some kind of blessing, and then I get it and end up saying something along the lines of Joseph here, and where I go, not this way, you know, not a blessing in this way, no. And I try to, like, in a way, like, grab God's hands of blessing and move them to my own way, like what Joseph was doing with Jacob here. But man, God just being always patient, saying, I know, son, I know. Oh, I got it. I understand. I know it. And that's the thing that we forget, y'all, is that God knows. We're prone to forget that part. God knows. And man, I am grateful that God continues to pull the old switcheroo on me on occasion, because there are times that I've wanted something and God doesn't allow it to happen. And in hindsight, I'm like, wow, I'm glad the Lord was in charge in that situation. I'm glad He switched hands on me, you know? We need to operate from a place of faith. And we need to remember that God knows what's best for me, for us, better than we do. All right? We need to operate in that place of faith. When bringing our wants, our desires, our hopes, and dreams before God, and allow Him to work in a way that only He can work. We need to let God work in His own way when bringing Him all of our desires, everything. Everything that we want to be, want, become, whatever, Lord. It belongs to the Lord. It is in His hands. This is really difficult, guys, having this kind of faith. There will be Joseph and Jacob-like seasons in our lives where we're in captivity or in slavery to something in order for us to be taught. We'll be wrestling with God in some certain ways. We'll have seasons like that in our life where we need to learn to stop trying to move God's hand to our wants and let Him do the work. Don't try to take God's hands out of the equations and move it ourselves. We need to accept the work of God in our life and be open and receptive in faith to what He has in store for us, to teach us, to mold us, to shape us more into the image of His Son, Jesus Christ. That is the kind of faith that we're called to in this walk, in this walk of walking alongside Christ in this world, you know. Verse 21. Then Israel said to Joseph, behold, I am about to die, but God will be with you and will bring you again to the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to you, rather than to your brothers, one mountain slope that I took from the hand of the Amorites with my sword and with my bow. Pastor Damian Kyle, he's a Calvary Chapel pastor, I think, out in California. Man, he just says it so well, and it's something along the lines of this. At this time that we're reading right here in Genesis, the Israelites are in Egypt. They're there to survive. They're just getting the food that's there in Egypt. But what they don't know is that they'll be there for generations and generations until the book of Exodus, until there are a whole slave population in Egypt. And y'all know the rest of the story. Moses will eventually take them out. But they'll be in Egypt for a long time, a very long time. And Jacob is reminding these children here, Joseph, Manasseh, Ephraim, he is reminding them that Egypt is not their home, all right? They have an inheritance further on in the promised land. Egypt is not our home. The world is not our home. Like these people here, we have an inheritance waiting for us as God's children, and we need to operate in that. We get so caught up in the 70 years, 70 give or take years that we live here on earth, this Egypt that we're living in. This place is not our home. We get so caught up in it and forget that we have an inheritance further on, right? This place is not our home. And that's where that living in faith takes place that I was just talking about earlier. We need to live in faith that we have, like these people here, we have an inheritance further on. We've received that same promise that God gave these people here through the life-saving power of the gospel, through Jesus Christ. We have received that same thing. We have an inheritance further on. This is not our home. We need to remember that. We need to operate in such a way that what we do here on earth will matter for eternity. What is going to matter in our lives 150 years from now? Probably nothing that we're doing right now this second. We need to make our lives matter for then, for eternity, right? We need to live in such a way that this world is not our home. So guys, it is my hope and my prayer that we truly learn to allow God's work in our life and try not to move his hand in the direction that we want, but rather in faith, trust in the fact that he has carried the people of Israel through history, and in this time, will carry his church through the days ahead, right? In this time of the coronavirus, all of the political division happening right now, just it seems like you turn on the news and it's one disaster after another, all the hectic times that we're in. Look, Israel was through worse things. They've been through worse things in throughout the Old Testament. Just read it. It gets pretty bad. God carried them through that. He will carry his church through now. We have a plan and a purpose that is in his hands. We don't need to be grabbing God's hands trying to make it our own, but rather align our lives with his plans and what he teaches us here in his word. So however difficult and frightening as that might be, we must have hope in the promises of God.